This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there's more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
All about want to, need to have.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Buda Baker out in front, and Metcalf track him down.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
What'd you think of DK Metcalf running down one of your teammates?
Once he ran past me, I was like, Buda, you on your own.
Earlier on the show, Philadelphia Eagles head coach Doug Peterson, Minnesota Vikings tight end Kyle Rudolph. Coming up, legendary NHL broadcaster Doc Emmerich from Spectrum Original. Temple, actor Mark Strong, and now it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air, and we had a great chat with Kyle Rudolph of the Minnesota Vikings in hour number two. If you missed any of that, if you missed anything over the first 2 hours, don't worry, we've got you covered, not just here on Peacock Streamer, where once we are done, you can go to the Rich Eisen Show page on the sports tab at the top of your screen and watch this show back on demand. There's also many clips that you could see on Peacock. Everything essentially is chopped up into bite-sizable format on our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Over 200,000 subscribers and growing stronger, and we greatly appreciate that. Speaking of strong, wait for it, Mark Strong, the star of Temple on Spectrum, and also some great films. 1917, he was in.
So good.
He was also in Kingsman. He was the bad guy in the Sherlock Holmes movie. He plays a lot of bad guys.
He's got that look.
He does.
Yeah.
But he kind of plays a good guy in his new show, and he'll be joining us in the second segment of this final hour. That also includes a revisiting of Jerry Jones, what he had to say about his team on the brink. I guess it's on the brink of a lot, but not... it's also on the brink of being in first place. One win Sunday night, and that takes care of that. Interestingly enough, one loss also puts them in different straits. Mike Tomlin speaking about the Steelers being the lone remaining undefeated team, and Ben Roethlisberger's three-interception performance. His response to that was classic Tomlin. We'll play that later on in this third hour of our Tuesday show that turns to our next guest, who I'm thrilled to have on. He's the author of his new book, Off Mic, and also last week announced his retirement. It will be a bummer not to hear him call so many great events for the National Hockey League and for NBC Sports, and he has done so much in his incredible, decorated career. Mike Emmerich, Doc Emmerich, here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Doc?
Richard, how are you?
I am very well, Michael. Thank you for calling into this program.
I have a question for you.
Oh, my gosh. Let's roll. What do you have?
Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup and had their parade, which was kind of on the water downtown in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Rays win,
yes,
we would gather there might be some sort of a replica of that. But what would the Dodgers do?
Well, as you know, there is a river here in Los Angeles, but it depends on the day whether it exists or not.
And all the circumstances make it really hard. You know, when you don't win since 88... and you have a celebration, you would want it to be something really special, but how can it be with given the circumstances? It's a tough thing. I'm sure they would enjoy planning it, but it would certainly have to be difficult.
No doubt that about that. And, Doc, you bring up 1988, and certainly here in Los Angeles, that's a special year, as you were remarking about the last time that the Dodgers won the World Series. And it is also famous for one of Vin Scully's most iconic calls of the moment, that Gibson went yard. I just want to give you the floor on what your favorite calls maybe of all time are of somebody else's, Mike.
Well, that would be one of them. And here is the night in 88 that happened. Bill Clement and I are at the Forum in Inglewood across town.
Yes.
Describing the Philadelphia Flyers and the Kings. And there's a circle-to-circle defensive zone pass between two Flyers defensemen. And for a reason that we can't at the time explain, an enormous roar goes up from the crowd at the Forum. And what has just happened is Kirk Gibson's home run. And we don't know about that until later on. And so that is why that night still stays in my memory bank, because it was one of those nights that you had no idea what happened because it was an inconsequential play. But boy, the crowd was sure into it, weren't they?
You thought
a D to D pass, and they erupted like crazy.
I thought it was like maybe a delayed penalty or something. Instead, it was just a delayed piece of information coming your way. And you know, I just was wondering again your sense of another announcer meeting the moment, knowing what it takes to actually do that.
Yeah, well, that would be one of them. And I think any situation where any guy that I've heard got away and let the crowd do the talking, and I think that that same night Jack Buck did the same thing after he said, "I don't believe what I just saw." But to let the crowd do it and let the guys in the truck show the pictures that they are there to show, I think that means a lot. I remember Lasorda running from the dugout and actually the camera jiggling some because how the vibration Dodger Stadium was going.
That's right.
Gosh, I'm getting goosebumps, and I'm not even a Dodger fan. The Pirates haven't even won since 79, and that's my team. It is marvelous, though, isn't it, that we – There was a collection of highlights of all-time great sports calls, and the title of it was "And the Crowd Roared." And, of course, we missed that this year in hockey. We didn't have crowds, but at least there are some that are going to be present at the game tonight. There are going to be some people there. I seem to hear the Dodger fans a little more when something good happens for them, but maybe that's just because the microphones that I'm hearing are picking them up more. But it's marvelous to think back during when you're as old as I am, to think back during the time when some teachers in your school would let you listen to World Series games during school, because we didn't start having World Series games at night until 1971. And so I was a part of that culture that was in secondary and junior high school when it was just understood that the good teachers, the nice ones, would take time out and you just miss talking about school that day so you could listen with the radio all the way up to the World Series. And that day, the girls in the class would just have to tolerate it.
Hall of Fame hockey announcer and also umpteen Emmy Award winner Mike Doc Emrick joining me here on the Rich Eisen Show. And we were just talking about iconic, you know, calls and moments. And you mentioned Jack Buck, his son Joe, just had a wild, wild end of a game in World Series Game 4 over the weekend. And I'm wondering what that would be for you in your career, the wildest finish you ever called and you didn't see coming, and it happened. What about for you, Doc?
Well, we knew there was going to be an end, but with multiple overtime games, you just never know. There were two, probably, and they were both four overtime games. One involved two of the greatest goaltenders of all time. Both are in the Hall of Fame. Dominic Hasek, who was playing for Buffalo, and Marty Brodeur, who was playing for New Jersey. It was in 1994, and it was a playoff series between the two teams at the old Odd in Buffalo. And, of course, it went well past midnight because it was four overtimes. There were 120 shots in the game, and the 120th was the only one that went in.
Oh.
A guy named Dave Hannon scored it for Buffalo, and it beat Brodeur. But there were shots that went off the post. Stefan Richey of New Jersey had a couple of breakaways, was stoned on one, hit the post on another. But all night long, no goals scored after the warm-up. That was it until Hannon scored. And that was the sixth game, and that forced a seventh game back in New Jersey, of all things. And Dale Hawerchuk was stoned by Brodeur late in the last 10 seconds or so of the third period in a one-goal game, and New Jersey won and eventually went on and faced New York Rangers. But the other one was the Easter Eve game that Bill Clement and I were fortunate enough to broadcast on ESPN, a Game 7 between the Islanders and Washington in 1987. And it went until about 20 till 2 in the morning, and it was a gallant war between two teams that was going to be settled sometime. And as it turned out, it was a wheeling shot by another Hall of Famer, Pat LaFontaine, that glanced off the post and went in. And the Islanders won the game and moved on to Philadelphia by bus and played them just with a partial day's rest. The next day started the next round of the playoffs. But I think those two would stand out in my mind for sure.
Well, they certainly did. And you know, you have such a way with words, Doc. It really is just wonderful to just take in and listen to. And I'm wondering, you know, I want to give you the floor on this, just in terms of exciting moments in sports, right? You've got to have something like maybe if it's a running back or a wide receiver that's breaking into the clear, or in baseball, there's something hitting the gap. Can it go for, you know, second to third, and can somebody come home? And basketball, it might be, you know, the clock winding down, and you know it's the game's going to be won or not. For me in hockey, it's the rush of the puck in a playoff overtime. I'm wondering if you would agree with that, and if so, describe for me what makes that so great, since you've seen it and described it so well for so long.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what often leads to that, which adds to the drama of the event, is when the goalie is pulled in the last minute that gets the game to overtime. Because when the goalie's pulled, a lot of times it's a one-goal game. And the ultimate form of hockey's Russian roulette, where you take a chance to try and get the game tied and force overtime. And probably the best example of what you're talking about and what I'm talking about was the epitome of what I think hockey was about, and it was seen by the largest audience I ever got to broadcast to, 27 million, the gold medal game in 2010 in Vancouver. The goalie was pulled in the last minute, and out of a mouse scramble, Zach Parise of the United States scored to force overtime. And then out of a half boards play, rather than an end-to-end rush, which is far more exciting, but usually with today's defensive schemes, it's not allowed very much. The puck came to Sidney Crosby, and he was able to score on Ryan Miller of the United States and win the game in overtime and the gold medal to Canada. But I think the thing that struck me about that whole event was it really summarized the best of hockey, and the greatest number of people got to see the game. And many of them were not hockey fans on that last Sunday of the Olympics in 2010, because Pierre Maguire was not working for us, but had been during the whole Olympics. And so we had the rights to take his interviews, which were done for the Canadian network, with Ryan Miller, the losing goalie, and with Sidney Crosby, the winning goal scorer. And the interviews that they gave were typically gentlemen's interviews, praising the other team, talking about good things that happened in the game, and really showed the best of what hockey athletes are. And we got those on before the medal ceremony took place. And many people that were watching the end of that game, because it went longer than most games, got to not only see the winning goal, but also got to see the conversations with two great players. And then the closing ceremony took place an hour, 2 hours later. I don't remember the exact time frame. But I was never prouder to be around the sport, and there have been many times that I have, than I was that day, because so many people got to see the best of what this is all about.
The brilliant Mike Doc Emrick. A few more minutes left here on our conversation on the Rich Eisen Show. And we, you know, Mike, we take great announcers for granted. We always do. It's just that the big game that we love to watch so much, it comes on, and we expect to hear the voice, because it makes us comforted to hear the voice. That it's, you know, announcers become part and parcel of our family in a way. And we sometimes forget it's a human being that's actually needing to prepare and needing to work and needing to raise their game to that level and needing to get on a plane, needing to sit in a hotel or sleep in a hotel away from family. I mean, the great pitcher turned broadcaster Don Drysdale passed away in one, to be, you know, fully honest. And that's my preamble to ask the simple question of why retire, Doc? Why now?
I'll try to answer this in a concise way, if I possibly can. It came to a point somewhere between the second and third rounds of the playoffs. That would have been shortly after Labor Day this year, that I was being so protected by NBC, and they had given me the right to stay at home and work the first two rounds, as well as the option to stay at home during the third round and the final. And I thought to myself, wow, they have protected me to the hilt here, and I'm completing the 47th year of broadcasting, but the 50th year since I first covered an NHL game, my 40th year of doing NHL television, and I have been blessed, aside from the cancer scare, with good health. And here it is, I'm 74, going on 75. My wife is healthy, too. This seems like a very good time in my life to put down the headset microphone and to celebrate the years that we still have of good health, and God only knows how many months or years that might be, and also to look back with pleasure on the many people that have been able to help me along and get me the opportunities that have led me to walk in and get in free to so many wonderful events. And so that's it. At age 65, I got a chance to turn to the New Jersey Devils, who had been good to me for 21 years, and I followed them with their games, and at that time not do their games anymore. And that was a hard break because we'd been through a lot together, but it was a time when I needed to do less. And at age 70, NBC allowed me to do fewer games as well. I was doing two games a week, which involved, as you alluded to, a lot of travel, because each game involved 3 days, a day to travel so that I could do the practices and the game on the second day, and then travel home the third day. So 6 out of 7 days to do two games in a week. And then at age 70, I dropped that back to just a game a week, plus, of course, all four rounds of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And the playoffs are very busy for 2 months, but that was fine because it's the most exciting time. And then came this year when it seemed like just the right time to walk away. So it is taxing, but it is fun, and it does provide you with some magnificent memories of times past, which I'm enjoying now.
Well, and times past and memories are what this book is all about. Off mic, how a kid from basketball crazy Indiana became America's NHL voice. Before I let you go, you've been so giving to so many people. You know, all of us in our industry know what many people might not is you've given out your email address publicly to invite those who want to get in the business to maybe find out how they can become a voice of a sport that they didn't expect to be when they were growing up in whatever state they are in. I'm assuming this book lends a credence to a lot of all that, Mike.
Yeah, I still get some submissions from various announcers, some of whom are now, because I've been doing it for a while, some of whom are now in the NHL. I don't have anything to do with them getting there. You know, Rich, if you have the talent, you get there, and if not, you don't. What I've provided is what was provided me 40 years ago, and that was an opinion that maybe you can take the best of anybody's opinion and learn from it, and through repetition and through concentrating on your work, improve as the years go on. But I am always so proud to learn of someone who sent me an email, and I listened to their work years ago, earning a living in the business, because it is wonderful, isn't it? You get a good seat for the game. You get in free. You get to work with some of the best athletes. And then as your years go on, you get a couple of checks in the mail each month, or you get a direct deposit into your bank account. And it's just a wonderful way to earn a living, and I encourage people to do it. Even though there's a lot of rejection and you don't always get the jobs you want, don't quit, because if you believe in yourself and have the talent, you're going to get there.
Well, you've heard the cries for many people, certainly here in Los Angeles, to see if Vin would do another inning or another game, and he has yet to do that. Is there any thought maybe down the road you would, or is this it? You've called your last game. You have hung up your
headset. No, this is it. But I am so grateful to have gotten a phone call, and I am so sorry that I was not able to pick up the phone call that I got on the weekend, and I plan to return it on his birthday, because he is a November baby.
Is that,
and that was from Vin.
Is that right? You got a missed call from Vin?
I got a missed call from Vin. And the first thing I'm going to do when I call him on his birthday is wish him happy birthday. And the second thing is to apologize.
Okay. Well, I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. And if you don't mind, I'm going to keep calling you and get you back on here because you're just one of the greatest storytellers. And I will miss your voice. I'll be very honest with you. So I'd love to, you know, give you that invitation if you're willing to accept it as much as possible.
You guys have the number, so please don't be a stranger.
Thank you. Right back at you. Mike Doc Emmerich, author of Off Mike, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. A Hall of Famer here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Amazing.
Literally could have gone on the rest of the hour.
For sure.
Let's take a break, though.
So good.
Ah, so great. So great. When we come back, the actor Mark Strong, you love him as the villain in so many of the movies he's been in. We'll talk about his new show, Temple, and sport when we come back. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen, all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Hadn't heard the name Dominic Hasek in quite some time.
Pat LaFontaine.
The Dominator.
Pat LaFontaine, too, is another one I haven't heard in a while.
That's not a name I hadn't heard in a while. Or Bill Clement, who called all those great... Yeah. By the way, those were ESPN days. Him and Bill Clement.
Yeah.
He did the Devils the first, like, 4 or 5 years. Well, and my seats were right behind the booth, which was out in the open.
Right.
My brother Frank texts me and goes, "You don't remember? We used to talk to him every game."
I'm sure. You couldn't be a
and
nicer
he was like the nicest
human.
Guy.
I know. Oh, it was him and Clement.
Chico.
And Mies and John Saunders. That's what the ESPN hockey team was. Broadcasting team in the late 80s, early 90s, before I arrived.
He's the voice. I mean, he really is. Yeah. I mean, him and Vin. Vin.
Of course. The great Doc Emmerich.
There it is. That's when the Devils retired.
The great Doc Emmerich. Oh. You got a missed call from Vin Scully.
How does that slip
by? Great?
Way?
I know. Right? You're right from your phone. You're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. And just a great conversation. That was just awesome with Doc Emmerich. If you missed it, if you're just tuning in right now, go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show, or check out the show on demand on the Peacock streamer if you're watching right now. If you missed it, you're just tuning into NBC Sports on Peacock. That was just a delight to talk to Doc Emmerich.
I mean, amazing.
Is our next guest on the phone right now, Christopher?
Yes, he is.
I've enjoyed his work in Zero Dark Thirty, Kingsman, 1917, Syriana, and so much more. And now we can all enjoy his work in Spectrum's originals, Temple, which started becoming available to all of us eager for this man's work. It started just yesterday, exclusively on Spectrum On Demand. The actor Mark Strong here on The Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well, thanks, Rich, and it's really great to be talking to you.
I really appreciate it. Where am I talking to you from? Where have I found you amidst this crazy world in October of 2020? Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm up in my attic office in London. I've just been filming Temple Season 2, funny enough. We had a filming day today and a very heavy scene, so I've literally come straight from there, straight to the phone, straight to talk to you.
Well, I greatly appreciate that. When you say heavy, what do you mean by heavy scene, Mark? What do you mean by that?
It was the end of an episode scene, and what happens is, without wanting to give too much away, somebody gets trapped in a room, and in trying to shoot their way out, they unfortunately get hit with the ricochet of their own bullet, and I come upon the scene and find something that I'm desperately don't need to find in that moment. So heavy in the sense that it's a really portentous moment right at the end of an episode.
Okay, so what would you say, where does Temple rank for you in terms of heavy? You've been in a lot of heavy stuff. I mean, I just mentioned again Syriana, 1917, Zero Dark Thirty, for instance. Even, you know, some of the Sherlock Holmes stuff, you play pretty nasty individual. Where does Temple rank for you, Mark Strong?
It ranks right up there, I have to say. I mean, you call those guys bad guys. I think they're just misunderstood, you know.
I like it. I like it a lot. That's great.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's interesting about characters like that is how conflicted they are. I think, first of all, we get a kind of visceral pleasure, don't we, from kind of indulging maybe our bad side. And sometimes we get to play it out through characters that we see on the screen and on the stage. So I kind of enjoy doing that. I also feel like it's quite far removed from me. You know, obviously, I don't go around in my daily life being a bad guy. I think I'm a relatively nice guy, to be honest. But it's kind of cathartic to be able to play those roles on screen. But the thing about them all is, even if they're kind of not liked, if I can make them at least understood, then I feel like I'm shining a light on a type of character, which is the sort of person I'm most interested in, which is a combination of good and bad, you know, very conflicted.
So then who's the most misunderstood character you've ever played, Mark Strong? Who's the most misunderstood then?
Well, funny you should say that. I think it probably is Daniel Milton right now in Temple, which is why I gravitated to this series, because basically he makes a lot of very dubious choices. He's a surgeon. He's living a very comfortable life. He's a very happy family man, but his wife falls sick. And in an attempt to save her life, he basically finds himself in a situation where he has to make some very odd moral and ethical choices in order to save her life. So he's doing things that might, you know, alienate an ordinary person's sense of what's right, but he's doing it for love. So I think that is as conflicted as you can get.
And then, you know, obviously opening an illegal medical clinic in the tube, Temple subway station, if you will, in London. It's not like a meth lab or anything like that, but it does sound like Breaking Bad, where Walter White had to make some serious decisions about moral decisions about what he needs to do, and he did it out of affection for his family to try and leave them a better life. It seems like there might be some sort of through lines that we're talking about right here, Mark. Would you agree?
There is certainly a similarity in that sense, but I think what happens to Walter White is he actually begins to enjoy his journey over to the dark side. I think the principal difference here with Daniel Milton is that he is dragged kicking and screaming down a path he doesn't want to go down, but because he has to make choices at every turn, in the moment he does the thing that he thinks is for the best, but actually ends up kind of taking a few twists and turns down a path which leads him to a side that he's not happy indulging, if you like. So I think he doesn't enjoy Breaking Bad. He's kind of forced to do things that that are just a little bit dodgy, that end up, you know, with him crossing the Rubicon, if you like. But like I say, it's all for love. So I feel like on some level an audience might be able to go with him and his choices.
I've got Mark Strong talking about his new show, Temple, which is, again, started on demand on Spectrum just this very past day, joining me here on The Rich Eisen Show. What sport do you enjoy following? Are you a Premier League? Do you like any particular football team over any other? What about your rooting interests, Mark? Do you have one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny you should say that. I am a very big Arsenal fan. Arsenal are you know, a Premier League soccer team. I was born in Islington in North London, which is where Highbury, the stadium, used to be. And I think when you grow up in the part of the world that I did, you had to make a choice about whether or not you were going to be involved with the football. And I've been a lifelong fan. I've been a season ticket holder for the last 20 years. You know, I'm not a rabid fan, but I follow their fortunes, and I have to say, if we win on a weekend, I feel pretty good, and if we lose, then I just need a day of being grumpy to get over it.
It makes sense. I totally understand the feeling. It's interesting, Mark, because I, you know, called an American football game, an NFL game, in the new Tottenham Stadium. And and the reason why I bring it up is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of the teams that came in. And was told that the fact that Tampa Bay's red colors were all over Tottenham Stadium was to the delight of the Arsenal fans, that their colors were inside Tottenham Stadium. And I kind of got a kick out of that, Mark. You know?
Yeah, well, Tottenham are the big Arsenal rivals. The Arsenal-Tottenham rivalry is a very big London rivalry that goes all the way back to the 30s, actually. Not a lot of people know where maybe that rivalry comes from, but basically it was because Arsenal were originally a South London team. They grew up, they were formed and were originally called Woolwich Arsenal, and they were based around the munitions workers who worked in South London. And Tottenham is an area in North London just kind of east of Highbury. And what happened in the 30s was the manager at the time managed to effect a move. So the stadium and the team and the fan base moved from South London up to North London, and Tottenham always felt that they were invading their territory. Unfortunately, that season, Tottenham went down. We stayed up, and I think we've been the most successful team ever since, much to the annoyance of the Tottenham fans. Although, having said that, the last few years, they've been doing really well. And now I think, now with our new manager, Arteta, we're running neck and neck with them again.
Well, I think you might enjoy this story too, Mark Strong, here on the Rich Eisen Show, is that the owner of Arsenal, your football club, is Stan Kroenke, who owns the Los Angeles Rams here in the National Football League. And I mentioned to members of the Rams organization how amazing the new Tottenham Stadium was and how the Rams should play a game there in the new Tottenham Stadium. And I was told essentially over his dead body that they will never do that because of Arsenal. That is what I was told.
Right. Stan and Josh own the team. And, you know, he's called Silent Stan. I don't think he gets involved that much with the team, but he has recently just, I think, enabled us to buy a player from Atletico Madrid who's come into our midfield that might be the answer to our problems this season. So I know that he's kind of, as silent as he may be, I think he's just behind the scenes been pulling some strings to enable us to maybe have a good season this season, because we've been struggling a bit the last few years. So our fingers are crossed for this season, and we're hoping to get back into the top four, which gives us a Champions League place. And that's what we're aiming for this season.
Now, I'll tell you what, I think we can both agree, Stan Kroenke's bank account is anything but silent. So I think that is definitely speaks loudly. You know, so clearly it has for you.
Yeah, he's not short of a few pennies, old Stan.
No, not at all. You know, we're on the Peacock NBC Sports on Peacock channel. Peacock here in the United States has a ton of Premier League action. So I'd love to get you back on when things begin to get cooking on that front. I'd love to chat with you on that.
I would love that. I mean, we're just at the beginning of our season, yep. And we're having kind of a crazy season, I have to say. And I don't know if it's because of the lockdown and all of that, but suddenly a lot of the games are not going the way that they normally do. And we're having kind of loads of games in which there's huge goal scores, which doesn't normally happen. I always felt that perhaps in America, way back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, soccer wasn't popular because there were too many 1-0, 1-1 type score lines. Well, at the moment, we're having like 5-0, 6-1, 4-1. You know, there's some great score lines going on, and something's happening this season. So it'd be great to get together and chat maybe towards the end to see what madness has happened.
I love it. And it's interesting because we're beginning to get used to not having any fans in the stands watching the NFL. Obviously, you've already been through that. And maybe it's just some players are beginning to get comfortable. And
how does that feel? How does that feel, Rich? Do you think that the game is changing because there aren't any fans in the stadium?
Well, I definitely think that there are, as I'm sure the same for in Premier League, for sure, that there are some stadiums where it is far easier for the away team to stroll into and come up with the win when there aren't crazy fans. You know, there's no chanting really in NFL stands, but I think that is no question something that we're still getting used to here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think part of the reason that these games are becoming really interesting is because the pressure of the fans is not there. I mean, obviously, if you're in a home game, you want your supporters to be helping your team to victory. But obviously going away is often really heartbreaking because you know that you're not there to support them. But this level playing field where playing at home doesn't have the advantage that it used to have is making things really interesting. And I do remember, actually, when I was filming over in the I did a play on Broadway, mm-hmm. and I went to see the New York Giants versus the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I remember most of all was the movement of the fans. Because when you go to a soccer game in the UK, everybody tends to sit quite close together. Every seat is full, and you're concentrated on the game. Nobody leaves their seat. Whereas I remember at the NFL game, people were in and out. They were calling out to each other. They were going off to get a drink. They were going off to get some food. The same was true when I went to see, when I was filming in Detroit, and I went to see the Tigers play baseball. I couldn't believe it. It was like a sort of medieval market with people running around selling hot dogs and beer. And in fact, there was one famous guy who kind of almost sang opera. And he was selling his hot dogs with this kind of hot dogs kind of song that he used to do. And I always used to wonder whether the players on the pitch could hear him and whether it put them off. So now I wonder what it must be like to play when there's no fans at all.
Oh, my gosh. There are a couple of venues where fans are allowed in. And I've spoken to players. They hear every word that's being said in their direction. Every last word. Oh, yeah. It can get particularly... You can't have any thin skin. Let's put it that way. You know, when you're hearing the fans...
No, quite. They're being, and I don't know, if you ever watch a Premier League game, you know, you sometimes see when a player goes to take a corner or a throw-in at the side of the pitch, you can sometimes see the fans just behind them. And if it's the wrong fans, it sometimes gets a little embarrassing because they get very, very vocal.
I bet. Mark, I really appreciate the call and the time. Before I let you go, I do have a question. I know you were only in it for a brief bit. What was it like shooting 1917? What was that like? Knowing that obviously, I'm sure that there were certain camera tricks, unless it was one whole long scene that you had to get right. What was that like for you, Mark?
It was a revelation, I have to say. It was very unlike the normal process of filming because I had two sequences in the film and I shot those on two separate days, a month apart. And every sequence in the film was shot as a continuous sequence. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of edits in the film. Obviously, the whole thing couldn't be shot in one, but there are a number of edits. But the kind of trickery of modern cinema means it's virtually seamless. But it meant that I turned up, we rehearsed my scene, we did it a few times, then we shot it a few times, and basically once we had it in the can, then that was it. There was no lens changing, there was no close-ups, there was no changing of camera angles or anything. It was just that one thing. And I remember kind of feeling like it was a much quicker process than you normally have on a movie. And I wondered whether it would work. But when I saw the film, I have to say, it blew me away. I just thought the immediacy of the feeling that it's one single shot gives you a real sense of what it might have been like to be there.
It really was, Mark. That film was, to me... I thought it was a best picture. I really did. And it blew me totally away and left me wanting more, to be honest with you, which is crazy because it was so harrowing. I wanted to kind of put it aside,
yeah.
You know, and I just wanted to ask you about, because I'm such a, you know, an aficionado of the way films are made. And it seemed to me so special. I was just wondering what it was like to act in it.
Well, it was a little like doing a series of mini plays, because obviously normally you have scenes in a normal film or television show that are, you know, a couple of pages long, whereas this would be five or six pages. So you'd be doing, you know, 6, 7, 8 minute sequences. And basically, if you come from the theater, which I did, and most of the actors in that film did, it really isn't that difficult to play those as continuous scenes. What it did mean, however, if, for example, like in one of the scenes I did, there are a bunch of guys moving a tree in the background, if one of those guys fell over or dropped a rifle or, you know, perhaps the truck that we got into didn't start, then we had to start the whole sequence again from the beginning. And I remember Andrew Scott, who's a lovely actor, has a sequence where he has to open a letter, read a letter, and at the same time he has to light a cigarette. And he had to do something like 40 takes because the lighter, you know, he'd get to the point where he had to light the cigarette and the lighter wouldn't work. So you had to have a lot of patience doing it. But once you got the scene shot, it was like doing a series of mini plays.
Mark, it's been a terrific conversation. I appreciate the time. I'm a fan of your work. Check out Temple. The 8-part series is available now exclusively on Spectrum On Demand. And speaking of medieval circus that he mentioned, one of the co-stars is Carice Van Outen, who is Melisandre from Game of Thrones. So there's a fascinating cast and a great show. And I look forward to seeing more in our next chat. Mark, thanks for the time.
That's really kind of you, Rich. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. That's Mark Strong here on The Rich Eisen Show. Fun chats already so far. Let's take a break. Chris Brockman, a news update. You've got the latest on Christian McCaffrey. Mike Tomlin had a fascinating comment. I think, Mike, that's a new Mike Tomlin drop for you, Del Tufo.
Yes.
That's coming up. And Matt Nagy was asked about maybe not calling the plays for the Bears anymore.
Uh-oh.
Yes, that's all coming up as we finish up this Tuesday show. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live. Drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Before we get to the news update, I want to handle the Matt Nagy stuff that was part of this whole thing, okay?
Have at him.
Do you have the quotes? Because they just arrived to me from the NFL Network Media
Desk. I did see a quote earlier today. During the last hour.
So, Don Bowie, believe it or not, we need the hecker information available again. I know we've got the news update coming up, but I'm telling you, I know you might think I'm crazy about the punter stuff. I know you think I'm crazy.
He had four inside the 10 yesterday.
This is no joke.
Those kicks were insane.
It's no joke. It's no joke. Almost as insane as you showing up digitally on a cardboard piece of cardboard.
With your head cut off.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show radio network, here on our Peacock program. So before we get to your news update, Christopher, Matt Nagy was asked today if he's going to give up the play calling or at least would consider it, okay? Because offensively, it's like pulling teeth. Again, the Bears are 5-2. They've won 5 of 7. That's the grand scheme of things. They are 2-2 since Nick Foles has taken over. That's a little bit more of a micro. And Carolina didn't look pretty, but it still counted as their fifth win in the standings. It still counted. Asked about giving up the play calling, quote, "There's no opposition from me if we feel like that's what the issue is. We look at that. Right now, where we're at, that's not where we think it's at. I'll always continue each week to look at it." It's a lot of ats.
Wow.
So the answer is no. Yep. And again, if I'm a coach on the hot seat and I'm a play caller, I ain't giving it up. No way. What, I think the other guy's going to be better at it?
Hell no.
So then I can keep my job by showing that I've lost my fastball of why I was coach of the year, dialing up the plays for Trubisky? No way.
Exactly.
No thanks. No thanks. Unless, you know, the management absolutely demands it, which apparently is what happened with Adam Gase with the Jets. He still has a job. God bless it. But here's the other thing, too. You know when Nagy didn't call timeout before halftime? Remember that?
Yes.
And just let it all just
like
run out.
40 seconds kind of run out.
Because you could force a punt, right? Force a punt because you never know. You could run it back. You could get it blocked. So anything can happen. You know why he said he didn't call a timeout? Quote, "I don't think we caught one punt yesterday." End quote. So this is how Johnny Hecker also changes the game. Coach is like, it's not even worth him coming out to punt it. Because he's just going to hang it way up in the air and jam it right down inside our 20 anyway. That's another way the punter affects the game when he's Johnny frickin' Hecker. Look at that. His second punt of the night in the second quarter that was downed at the Chicago 10 was his worst punt of the night. Everything else was from the 7 on in. And he basically had a coach not call timeout to try and force him a punt because what does it matter anyway? We're not going to receive it. Johnny Hecker, everybody. I'll leave the punting stuff there and turn over and punt it across the way.
Hey.
A little hang time to Chris Brockman for his news update, everybody.
And now, with a report of the day's news from the world of sports and entertainment, someone who is not a journalist or newsman by any definition of the word whatsoever, it's Chris Brockman.
All right, Christopher, what do you have over there?
Okay, remember yesterday, Peter King, we talked to him, and he wanted to talk to Ben Roethlisberger for his column this week.
Mm-hmm.
But Ben wasn't having it because he was pretty pissed off about his performance in the game. Well, Mike Tomlin talked about that and about Ben's three picks against the Titans.
Nothing to be concerned about, to be quite honest with you. One of them was at the end of the half, and we're trying to make a play. The other one was a tip pass. Sometimes you know that misfortune happens. And the other one was trying to make an aggressive play at the end of the game to a guy that he developed a great rapport with over the course of the game, who had made several top-notch, tough combat catches. And so, you know, we live and we learn, but we don't cry over the spilt milk, man. We move forward to this week's challenges, understanding that preservation of the ball is important in this matchup.
Mike Tomlin, everybody.
Don't cry over the spilt milk.
We don't cry over the spilt milk.
There you go. That's your... I'll rain down my judgment. And we'll move forward, right? Isn't that
it's high on my damn agenda.
You got the three? What do you got?
It's high on my damn agenda.
Okay, that's
fine. I'll rain down my judgment and we'll move forward.
There we go.
But we don't cry over the spilt milk.
There we go. They all come in threes. It just took a very long time for the third one to arrive.
My goodness.
How great is Pittsburgh, Baltimore going to be this weekend? Come on now. How great is that going to be? Oh, baby. The battle has been rejoined.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, because of Big Ben's injury, we took the year off of that great rivalry. Oh, baby, it's back. I can't wait. That is going to be some great popcorn-ready stuff. Is that an early window game? Is that like a 1 o'clock? Is that just your 1 o'clock, or did they move it back because we got rescheduled? I'll look that up while you continue on with your news update.
There was an NFL Flex schedule update, but that was for Week 10. Okay. That was for Week 10.
What do you got?
You talked about Christian McCaffrey earlier, Rich. So he is practicing today. Matt Rhule did comment this afternoon, said he is hopeful McCaffrey will be ready for Thursday. Said it's going to see how he responds to practice today or to Wednesday. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's moving around great. We'll just let the medical people determine how much he can do or when he can play in a game.
Okay.
There you go.
So the miracle of Mike Davis is still alive. The Hanukkah.
Still alive.
Mike Davis, the Hanukkah of fantasy running backs.
I'm guessing Mike Davis will get some touches this week. McCaffrey's not going to go out there and have 100% load after coming back, but
he's definitely coming back. Is that what's is it definite?
Like, I would say 90 minutes. I would say the coach saying I'm hopeful he plays, it means he's going to play.
Okay,
that'd be my guess.
All righty.
We mentioned Chris Godwin fractured his index finger. He's out for at least a week for the Buccaneers. Scotty Miller also dealing with an injury. So, Bucs wide receiver unit really banged up. Seahawks. You saw Chris Carson go down. So he's week to week with a mid-foot sprain. But Carlos Hyde is dealing with hamstring tightness, and he's uncertain to play. Add Travis Homer, who has a bruised knee. He's questionable.
Oh, my word.
That leaves rookie DJ Dallas. As the only healthy running back on the Seahawks roster right now.
DJ Dallas.
What a name.
If you were in a deep fantasy league, throw out a waiver claim for DJ Dallas.
Does that sound like somebody that you would work with, spinning
yeah,
records?
Yeah, DJ Dallas. I may have opened up for DJ Dallas in New York City one time. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was DJ AM, DJ Dallas, and Mike Deltuvo was the starting DJ.
Mikey D.
DJ Michael D.
Opened up for DJ Dallas.
I may need to get DJ Dallas on the Friday Night
DJ Big
show.
D.
As in
Dallas, Big D.
You have the Snoop Dogg drop, right?
Oh, yeah. And come on. You want me to play that?
Yes, of course. I mean, my goodness, this is for DJ Dallas.
What it do? It's your boy Big Snoop D O Double G coming at you live from Los Angeles. And my DJ, DJ Mikey D. D is in these nuts.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That is the best. I have Larry King and Snoop. Could be the two best drops in my life.
DJ Dallas D.
In the mix.
Two other things quick, guys.
By the way, just a reset. It is a straight up 1 p.m. Eastern.
Oof.
Ravens Steelers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's America's game of the week.
Seek that out. Our friends at DirecTV are high-fiving that they got that for an early window. Yeah, if you want to go check it out on your Sunday ticket. It's a CBS game. I mean, that's as Nance and Romo as it says right there. That's
right.
That's one of eight games, one of eight earlies. And that's then three lates with San Francisco and Seattle and New Orleans and Chicago highlighting the late window of the late window. And then that Week 10 game, I thought, when you're saying flex, I thought, did NBC really flex out of a New England Patriot game?
It got flexed to 425.
No. The Steelers got flexed to 425. Just Cincinnati Bengals and Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. That's it.
They're not going to keep the Patriots. In Senate football.
Yes, they did.
I mean, there's still time, right?
No, you got to declare now.
Why is Sunday Night Football going to be a 40-point route of Ravens-Patriots?
You don't think most of the country would love to tune in to see that? Still the Ravens and still New England.
But it's a terrible game.
Not yet.
It's about to be.
And your version of terrible is much of America's delight.
I'm thinking about ratings. I'm thinking big picture for the Peacock.
Hey, man, all I'm saying is I tried to get the Mookie Betts trade rescinded yesterday with Rob Manfred.
I did appreciate
that. And then you called him. By the way, that should be a new drop.
No, I just called Rob.
You called Rob Manfred Rob.
He did.
I know. Well,
what should he have called him?
Commissioner. Come on. What else? Finish up strong.
All right. Two things finish up strong. Saw this. Yes. This is really cool. As we know, the Masters is going to take place in 2 weeks.
Yes.
At Augusta.
Yes.
ESPN and Augusta National teaming up. College game day is going to be from Augusta on November 14th.
You mean the third round of the Masters?
Third round of the Masters coverage is going to have college game day on its grounds.
Does that mean some of the patrons will be let in, and if there are, and they hold up signs like ragging on Fuzzy Zeller, or is that what it is?
Nice.
I mean,
Patrick Reed. Is it Patrick Reed?
A good one.
Doubtful. Well, I just think it's going to be so cool to just.
And then
where are they going
to
be?
And then they ask Corso, is Bryson DeChambeau going to win it? And he puts on like a green helmet or something like that.
He puts on an oversized DeChambeau hat,
yeah, something like that.
Drink 18 protein shakes.
He looks like Rick Moranis in Spaceballs every single time he's putting these helmets on now.
But he's doing it from his house.
I know that.
Yeah,
I mean,
crazy.
Lee's got to stay home, man. He's got to be remote.
Yeah. They should put him on Amen Corner, like right there on the bridge.
Where are they going to put him? Okay.
It's going to be awesome. And lastly, kind of bummer news for Wisconsin fans. Quarterback Graham Mertz's PCR test came back positive.
Oh, boy.
So he's in the Big Ten 21-day protocol for COVID. He's going to miss games against Nebraska, Purdue, and
Michigan. Well, I mean, that's unfortunate. That's terribly unfortunate.
Yeah, because he was awesome.
Well, I mean, honestly, we have no idea how this virus affects people. I hope he is safe and as asymptomatic as he possibly can be, and we can get him back, and he's healthy, and he's the same. This is frightening stuff. And in terms of that, in terms of what's going on in this world, I just want to say this. If you have a ballot that needs to be mailed in, I think the time's up. You need to drop it off in person. Find where your drop box is and drop it off in person, or plan to vote in person if you can, safely as possible. Democrats or Republicans, vote. Get this mail ballot in somebody's hands where it counts, okay? Let's do all that. I want to thank Kyle Rudolph. Doc Emmerich, how great was that?
Amazing.
I want to thank Mark Strong as well. Our first guest tomorrow, we have tomorrow two football players. We've got Josh Allen will be on tomorrow's program.
All right.
We've got Davante Adams on tomorrow's program. Kyle Brandt's on tomorrow's program. Only one of them is selling a cereal.
Oh.
How's that for a tease? We got a tease. For those of us on our radio show, thank you for tuning in. For Peacock, stay tuned a little bit more on the other side. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.